Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Hello, everybody. How are you today? I'm so excited to be back with you. Welcome to today's Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT. I'm really, really, really excited. This is going to be a challenging episode for everybody. I hope you know that. So prepare to put your thinking hats on, because we got some guests who are going to, they're going to shake the narrative. So get ready to be shooken or shook. Huh. And it's a Friday. So unless you're watching back later, in which case I can't promise what day it is. Regardless, it's a new day and it's a new dawn and we are back again. And the question is, are you allowed to speak with me? I'm going to be breaking down some big walls on the Johnny Vedmore Show. Why the devil not? But some of the people I'm going to speak to are considered dangerous to some. Well, to many. Not only their ideas, but also their associations. In fact, I was warned not to speak to my first guest on multiple occasions. I was told by a couple of people that they would break off all communication if I crossed that final line, dared speak with someone. And so, of course, I've got him on the show. Now, I'm not sure you realize how I am as a person yet, but under no circumstances should you tell me that I'm not supposed to speak with someone. That's a red rag to a bull for me. It's a dare. It's a gamble that I'm willing to roll a dice on. It's a challenge that I'm willing to embark on, an adventure where my beliefs and those of the people that I associate with are tested. And I like to test things, of course, especially prevailing narratives, even if we create them ourselves. In fact, my second guest also challenges me in other ways, and I refuse to bow to the people who tell me no. Are you one of those people? I'm not sure. We'll find out. We learn so much from those we are not allowed to speak to. Regardless of the reasons for our censorship or their censorship, we learn a lot. I was once considered a lefty. Yes. And I considered myself as a lefty too. And the only way I wriggled free of some of the left-wing trappings was by listening to those who inhabited the other side of the political spectrum. I didn't know where to start on that journey. I knew I had to listen to the opposing views if I was ever going to effectively argue my own beliefs. But finding someone I disagreed with was more difficult than I expected. So I decided to start with someone who I still disagree with today, Ben Shapiro. Yes, I was working in a little two-star hotel where I was sneakily writing articles behind the reception desk during my shifts. Don't tell them or they'll come tell me off. And the walk to work was a few miles up the local A470 road and gave me 45 minutes to take in a podcast. And ritually listening to someone I despised every day was quite difficult. It was challenging. But I knew that I had to make the effort if I wanted to better understand those with whom I disagree. Ben Shapiro was perfect, and it led me to listening to all of the intellectual dark web, almost religiously. What I didn't expect was how quickly I understood their arguments and how they were formed. Ben Shapiro was the king of a basic fallacy. He wielded whataboutism almost with every breath. He would lay out the complaint his ideological opponents were using, and he would use forms of moral relativism to excuse the actions of those he supported. Unfortunately for Shapiro, his own associate, Jordan B. Peterson, helped me understand about othering and the pitfalls of using moral relativism to win an argument. In fact, that's why Ben Shapiro's arguments were only plausibly effective against college-aged kids. I even expected to see a showdown between Peterson and Shapiro at some point, but it never arose. Instead, Peterson spent his time othering and using the same fallacies he warned others not to use, and seemingly ignoring Shapiro's own weak arguments. I learnt very quickly that people are not what you think. But after listening to those I didn't agree with for years, and studying logical fallacies in depth, I soon realized that I was no longer on the left of the spectrum. And I was not right either. Instead, I was watching individuals motivated by their own agendas. Each person had their blind spots and contradictions, just like me and just like you. So by the time people told me not to listen to my first guest, I was really interested to find out more. And when I did, I discovered someone who I think is a lot like me, someone who wasn't chained by basic ideology, someone who I really liked. Each time I go tumbling down a rabbit hole these days, it's because I listen to someone I'm not supposed to listen to. And I have no intention at all of stopping. So prepare for a show where you will be challenged and you will meet people who you would maybe have once upon a time in the past avoided. Now, why not give TNT a follow? We are on all major social platforms, including Facebook, X, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk TNT.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Awesome, people. I always look forward to this part where we get to look at a little bit of current affairs. Recent reporting has revealed that Israel's military is using a new artificial intelligence system to generate lists of tens of thousands of human targets for potential airstrikes in Gaza, calling into question not only statements from the IDF, which continue to deny such accusations, but also reopening the debate over the ethics of any military implementing lethal autonomous weapon systems. Now, here with this story, joining me now is TNT news producer Adam Clark, aka Ruckus. Ruckus, hello. How are you today?
I'm good. I like these lethal autonomous weapons. That's a nice way of saying killer robots. That's what we're discussing here. We'll get into a little bit of that. There have been rumblings this week. I've heard a couple presenters just kind of like, you know, dip their toe into it and briefly mention it. And I was really looking forward to the opportunity to fully report on this. So I am happy to see that we have some more information about this, and I'm a little prepared today. This is the reason I've been seeing people talking about this is thanks to it's a nonprofit organization, a media outlet called Plus 972 Magazine, who revealed just recently, I think within the last week or so, how the Israeli military is employing AI-based technologies to select bombing targets in the Gaza Strip. And there's a number of them, and there are actually a couple of reports that this outlet has put out. This new system that has caught the attention of everyone, and you may have heard of the name of it already. I'll get to that in a second. This one in particular is generating, apparently, reportedly, kill lists, like large kill lists. It condemns tens of thousands of Palestinians. It's part of what is described by Zero Hedge as IDF's growing dependence on AI to plan lethal strikes. Now, the outlet, Plus 972 Magazine, it's a Tel Aviv-based magazine. They cited six Israeli intelligence officers, and they said the previously undisclosed AI system dubbed Lavender has played a, quote, central role in the unprecedented bombing, end quote, of Gaza since last October, with the military effectively treating its output, quote, as if it were a human decision, end quote. According to the outlet, I'm going to quote from them here, formerly, the Lavender system is designed to mark all suspected operatives in the military wings of Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, PIJ, including low-ranking ones, as potential bombing targets. It went on to say that, quote, during the first weeks of the war, the army almost completely relied on Lavender, which clocked as many as 37,000 Palestinians as suspected militants and their homes for possible airstrikes, end quote. However, while thousands have been killed in the resulting air raids, the majority were, quote, women and children of people who were not involved in the fighting, end quote. That is what the six officers told the magazine, noting that Israeli field commanders often rely on the AI system without consulting more substantial intelligence. So one source said specifically, quote, human personnel often served only as a quote unquote rubber stamp for the machine's decisions, end quote. And they added that many commanders spent a mere 20 seconds reviewing targets before approving strikes, quote, just to make sure the lavender marked target is male, end quote. Wow. So there's a lot to this. I would encourage folks to check out the report from the magazine. Again, that's Plus 972 magazine. Since that report came out, Israel came forward and said, oh, no. We would never. Their official statement is, quote, that the IDF does not, quote, use an artificial intelligence system that identifies terrorist operatives or tries to predict whether a person is a terrorist, end quote. Well, this would appear to be a false statement on their part based on what I'm seeing here. Now, I do want to point out real quick, Johnny, this isn't the first time, this isn't the first military to be using computers and code. We could go into what happened in Afghanistan and Iraq and what America did. We could go all the way back to the Vietnam War, where they were building networks of sensors along the Ho Chi Minh Trail. So this is technically nothing new, but it is new for Israel to get its caught with its pants down, I think. But what say you?
Yeah, I'm hearing word from Palestine. We've been, me and someone else have been trying to get people who are in Palestine, either on the West Bank or in Gaza, to come on the show if it's possible, if it's safe to do so. I mean, they're obviously extremely worried, but a lot of the reports that I hear back behind the scenes is that there's a constant buzz in the sky as drones fly over the top, and they are being used to, and of course the intensity of the use of automation is just going to keep moving forward as technology moves forward. We are really entering into, we can see this is the start of a new age of warfare, where humans will be vaporized on the orders of robots, and afterwards other humans will check whether they should have vaporized them or not. And that might explain why there's been so many civilian casualties, because Gaza is being used as a test bed to test out really dangerous AI technology. And this is one of the reasons why I'm really happy to be speaking with the first guest, because he is an expert in AI, and we're going to talk about, you know, what we can expect to see in the future. And and some of it is horrific. Really, we are giving up humanity to computers willingly. And Israel, you know, they're exactly the type of, I think we could probably call them a rogue state at this point. They're out of control, and they're the most likely to implement such technology dangerously. So I'm not surprised at all to hear it. Any news on where, like, any other news outlets reporting on this, or is it just this one news outlet?
Well, they were the ones that did the report, so others have picked up on it and are reporting about the reporting, and then tying together. This is painting a picture where it's like, you know, Israel would like to pretend like they don't mess around with AI. It looks like they've been doing this for a while. As far back as 2021, there were reports from the Jerusalem Post who said that Israel just won its first AI war in an earlier conflict with none other than Hamas, when they were using a number of machine learning systems to sift through data and produce targets. So, you know, there was also recent people are just catching on to the fact of I mentioned America here, but the U.S. military has this project called Project Maven, and that supplies AI targeting that's been used in the Middle East and in Ukraine. China's doing something similar. So I would be very interested to hear what your first guest has to say about all of this. And in particular, if he's heard of Lavender, there were also two other AI programs that Israel's using. One was called Where's Daddy, if I'm not mistaken. And the other one was a Hebrew word that I don't remember off the top of my tongue, Habdas or something like that. So again, nothing new and nothing new for Israel, apparently, Johnny.
It's completely insane that humans cannot see where this is leading, that eventually we won't even be, you know, it won't be humans against humans. It'll just be algorithms deciding who to make disappear. And that's really, we're in a serious point. I think people have got to also understand that what we're seeing in censorship in places online like X or Facebook, when we see censorship on YouTube, well, there's an algorithm deciding who to censor. And that algorithm will quickly be turned into an algorithm that decides whether that person should die or not. So we are escalating. This is escalating quickly, and we've got to fight for humanity on our hands, I believe. Thank you, Ruckus. That's massively important news to bring us. Really appreciate it. Hope to see you in the second hour. Yeah,
as long as the Terminators don't beat us to it.
Well, I can't promise that, but still, anyway, let's try and be a little bit positive and go forward. We're going to be speaking to my next guest soon. Really looking forward to this, and we're going to be discussing this in full. So you're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
TNT's State of the Nation.
President Xi of China absolutely has his eyes on Taiwan. He always has. And America has been a steadfast supporter of Taiwan until Stumblebum Joe hit the scene. And now President Xi says no one can stop the, quote, family reunion with Taiwan. These people really want a war, don't they?
Family reunion. Well, that's a great title for what we got going on the grand chessboard here, isn't it? Yeah, they've been telegraphing this one for a long time, and no surprises here, Timothy.
And, you know, I think that the Taiwanese might have something to say about that being a family reunion. Like Ashley Biden not wanting a family reunion with Joe. Like, she doesn't want another shower with Pedo Joe. I think that's how Taiwan must feel.
State of the Nation on Today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Today's News Talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome back, my friends. Yes, my first guest on this very special Friday edition of the Johnny Vedmore Show is someone I wanted to speak to in person for quite a while. He's an awesome researcher, author, commentator, and expert on the AI behemoth that's coming down the tracks. Some of you may know him from his regular appearances on Steve Bannon's War Room. Some of you have already read his book, Dark Aeon, Transhumanism and the War Against Humanity, which came out at the end of last year. He is a powerhouse of knowledge, and pray that this is not the only such conversation we have, because I absolutely love this guy. You can find Joe Allen on X under the handle Joe at JoeBotXYZ, and you can get to his Substack Singularity Weekly by just typing in JoeBot.xyz into your browser. So hold on your hats, people. This will be a roller coaster conversation, which will give you a rich and fascinating dark red pill to swallow. So without further ado, Joe Allen, my friend, welcome to the Johnny Vedmore Show. It's nothing but a pleasure to make the acquaintance.
Johnny Vedmore, the legend. Thank you very much for having me, man.
You're beautiful. So, Joe, we clearly see eye to eye on many matters concerning the coming AI revolution. Can you tell people a little bit about the premise of your book, Dark Aeon?
It's very simple. It's really the exploration of the personalities, the ideas behind the transhumanist movement. The concept of a war against humanity has two levels. One, the war against the very concept of the human, and two, the darker predictions that the rise of AI, robotics, all of this is a sort of new life form that very well could replace humanity itself. I'm very skeptical of the bold claims as to an AI doom scenario, but I think you should take it very, very seriously when the wealthiest men on Earth, the most powerful governments on Earth, are endorsing a total overhaul of what it is to be human.
Well, when did you begin like becoming interested in where we were heading with artificial intelligence?
I would say, you know, there was never any single moment, but I would say probably one of the most important was reading kind of back to back Ted Kaczynski's Industrial Society and Its Future, and also Ray Kurzweil's The Age of Spiritual Machines. That would have been towards the end of the year 2000. And at the time, everything Ray Kurzweil was talking about, even some of the extreme streams of logic that Ted Kaczynski was talking about, I saw it as being somewhat ridiculous. The end of year 2000 was fairly tame compared to now. But definitely over the last 5 years, I take very seriously everything from the rollout of artificial intelligence companions to the premise that human beings are best served by linking our brains directly to these systems. Any normal person should be shocked, but at this point, I think people are fairly numb to all of it. It just seems like a circus, a clown show. And I fear that we are inevitably going to be drawn into this three-ring circus. We already have, by and large.
Yeah. Now, didn't Ted Kaczynski commit suicide recently?
Yeah, I believe it was last June. And, you know, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. It wouldn't really, if they were going to off Ted Kaczynski, they probably would have done well to do it before he published his last book. But one way or the other, it's interesting that Ted Kaczynski and Werner Vinge, the guy who really laid down the foundation of the concept of the singularity, died within a year of each other. There's some, without going into the details, it seems somewhat significant on a kind of cosmic or mystical level, but no need to go too woo-woo, at least not right away.
I like a little woo-woo, though. But do you think the people who are currently pushing AI forward have the best interests of humanity at heart, then?
I think that the basic principle that I assume is that the people who are at the center of the Silicon Valley efforts and up to Seattle, Boston and London and Tel Aviv and Beijing, I think that they operate on the same principle that most people operate on. And that's that they are going to do what's good for them and theirs. And if they can help others on the way, some of them will. If they can crush others on the way, if that's necessary to their plans, they probably will. So, you know, I'm a firm believer that there is good and there is evil. But I think that most of what we call good is what's good for us. Most of what we call evil is what's inconvenient or damaging to us. And most people operate on that kind of animalistic level. And I think that what's really alarming about the Silicon Valley push to overhaul humanity is that by and large, it is positioning them to benefit oftentimes at our expense. And if you just look at the history of the ways in which these corporations have taken over the internet, the ways in which social media have completely transformed the way people interact with each other, think about themselves, think about the world, on and on and on, up to COVID, absolutely, and everything that came along with it. What I see is something very, very predatory, which is to say something very, very human, at least our ape-like side.
So you don't think that Sam Altman and Eric Schmidt are doing God's work then? Or should I say, are they friends to human beings?
Which God?
Yeah, indeed. I think, is that the point? Are they creating a new God?
That is something that I document in great detail in the book, the religious underpinnings of this, which are, in essence, kind of spiritualized atheism. Atheists finding themselves afloat in a cosmos that doesn't care about humanity, in which humanity appeared in some ways by accident. There is, I think, a really deep need to have a God, to have a spiritual connection. And they make it very apparent again and again and again. Either it's very explicit and they talk about this quest to create a new life in terms of religious aspiration, but more frequently they simply talk about it in ways that are implicit. We are creating a being that will be the final authority on most or even all things, whether or not this or that policy is valid, whether or not this or that social structure is valid, whether or not this or that conception of the universe is valid. But what they're talking about, without any doubt, is the creation of a digital God to fill the vacuum of a God that never existed for them.
Wow. Right. We're going to take a quick 30-second news break. You're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
Okay, everybody, listen up.
Big news.
Big news.
Real big news.
Here we go.
Now, TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. A faction of conservative lawmakers blocked an effort by House Speaker Mike Johnson to schedule a vote on funding the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, particularly Section 702, which allows U.S. intelligence agencies to monitor foreign communications via American networks and indirectly collect data on Americans. Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić asserted that Serbia will not succumb to Western pressure to align with their stance on the Ukraine conflict, or to impose sanctions on Russia.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah, 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad, listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back again to the Johnny Vedmore Show. I'm talking with Joe Allen here. We're talking about AI. He's a man who knows a lot. Joe, there's many competing visions of a world where AI is utilized on a day-to-day basis. It's clear that we can't roll back the clock. There's no stopping it. AI is here whether we want it or not. How do you see its incorporation in the future, this future in technology unfolding right now? How will it change us and how quickly will this happen?
These are very difficult questions to answer. A lot of times whenever I hear somebody make very, very specific claims as to what AI will be or won't be, I kind of tune out because it very, very infrequently do any of these hard predictions come true. But I can say this with no doubt in my mind. What we're seeing right now, happening right now, is the rollout of AI in three sectors that are a particular concern to me: education, medicine, and the military. You could add to that corporate life and also day-to-day life. Those are also very, very important. But education is extremely important because once you have normalized hybrid education in which students have a kind of AI companion, the kind of AI guardian angel, and they become acculturated, it becomes normal to turn to this AI as an authority on what is and isn't real, what they should or shouldn't do, then you have an entire generation. Like, if you think that the blue hairs are bad, imagine what the Borgs are going to be like. Same with medicine. We see already the way in which the biomedical establishment has asserted its authority in ways that are completely illegitimate over the last 3.5 years. And you add AI to that. You add AI as a kind of authority on diagnosis. You add AI as a means to monitor people's internal biological states. You begin to move into the brain-computer interfaces, all of that. What you have is a humanity that's kind of stripped bare on the patient side. And on the doctor side, it becomes that much more disconnected from the deep biological and spiritual connection that any doctor and patient should have. It's already a problem. It will just increase. And then with the military, as you well know, as you've covered quite a bit extensively, in the military right now, you have both in Ukraine and in Israel. And this goes back to the war between Armenia and Azerbaijan, and really even before that with just the drone strikes in the early 2000s. But what you have right now in Israel and in Ukraine are AI systems that are geared to target acquisition, meaning that they are basically identifying what are and are not valid targets. And so from that point, you have oftentimes a very, very short window in which some human in the loop makes the decision, okay, yes, we will kill. And what do you see in both Ukraine and especially with Israel and Gaza? Civilians getting mauled. So in the same way that a doctor and patient now have this digital mediation that is increasingly powered by AI, another life or death scenario in which death is the objective is now mediated and in some sense instantiated by AI. And you have people like Eric Schmidt, you have people like Mark Andreessen, you have a lot of different people from the left, middle, and right who are arguing that the future of warfare should be conducted by lethal autonomous weapon systems, purely autonomous without humans in the loop. And as China pushes this forward, it incentivizes America and other world powers to do the same, ending in what I would imagine is a fairly nightmarish scenario in which not only do people die at the push of a button, but maybe the button was pushed long ago and it's simply the system playing out the objectives that have been programmed into it or just simply emerge from it.
Are we already off kilter? Because we were reporting on Israel's use in Project Lavender of AI, and it seems that they're obviously using AI to select targets much more. They're using AI to bomb those targets, and then they're checking their results afterwards. Are we already gone that far that we're now, it's mostly AI in future warfare going to be used rather than humans?
You know, a lot of it will be kind of it will be determined by a postmortem of the conflict in Gaza, the conflict in Ukraine. Now, you've had like in January of 2023, 2024, you had Alex Karp. I'm sorry, 2023. We're there. Boom. January 2023, it was very striking. Alex Karp at the World Economic Forum talking about Palantir and the way that Palantir has basically donated their systems to Ukraine. And the way in which that conflict is being used is a kind of testing ground, is a laboratory for AI technologies, Palantir being among the most advanced. And then more recently in Israel, you've got Hapsura or Gospel. That was one of the first systems that really got a lot of attention. And then Lavender is ultimately in the same vein, right? You have a system that is raking over surveillance. It's raking over various intelligence documents and is selecting targets for the human beings. And then again, at least we're told, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if this were not true, if there aren't humans in the loop oftentimes, but you do have a human then who basically said, gives it the go-ahead. So yeah, we're already there. I don't know, though, how far it will go in the future. I mean, it's anybody's guess. Are we on the brink of World War III, or is that just a lot of noise to keep the populace afraid? You know, the future will unfold as it unfolds. All I know is that all of the guns are cocked and loaded, and we've got them pointed at each other. And it wouldn't take that much to spark off an intense conflict. And as these systems are put in place, possibly not even just the large scale, you know, like the the major superpowers such as the U.S. or China or Russia, but even rogue actors using these systems and then incentivizing the larger powers to start using them in return. So no, we're definitely working our way into nightmare territory. And again, I think the incentive or the primary motivation, as always, what is good for me and what is good for mine. And for these guys, what is good for them is more wealth, more political power, more dominance over territory, and they will use whatever tools at their disposal to get it, and they are.
Indeed. And you were talking about doctors earlier. Well, we can talk about Dr. Kissinger, the late Dr. Kissinger, and Eric Schmidt, who wrote a book entitled The Age of AI and Our Humanity's Future, or Our Humanity Future, Future of Humanity, which Time magazine spun as Kissinger's last attempt to save humanity. But we all know that the people in Kissinger's circles had predicted AI in the late 1960s in work like The Year 2000 by Herman Kahn of the Hudson Institute. Were they always planning to use AI just to control us? And is AI being designed to do that? Is it to program humanity?
You know, you have to kind of read between the lines to get there, because what you hear from Kissinger and Schmidt and Daniel Huttenlocher, the third author, is, and you see this across the board, there's always these kind of warnings of the dark side. There are always these proclamations that this will be liberatory for humanity. And I'm as skeptical of that as I am any advertisement or any government propaganda. What you see in the rollout of AI that I think has some of the most dramatic effects are, this, for instance, the systems that were used at the behest of the U.S. intelligence community and other State Department entities to suppress any sort of dissident perspective in regards to COVID, in regard to the election, in regard to Ukraine. So it's in those instances, obviously being used to control. And then as far as just controlling narrative, controlling the ideas in people's minds, it is absolutely astounding that they've created systems that can be so unpredictable. And they are in many ways unpredictable until you start putting on the safety layers, until you start guiding the output of these systems. And so then you end up with these kind of cartoonish sort of outputs like you saw with Google's Gemini, where you had like a black George Washington and a black Viking and all this other stuff. I don't think that they intended for that to happen, by the way. I think that that was just kind of an extreme iteration of what they intended to happen. But what you see there is that as people become more and more coupled with AI, as we become kind of human AI symbiotes, then that lens that is algorithmically constructed becomes that much more, it really becomes sort of the eyes, our second eyes through which we see the world. I say we, I don't use that, but I think that the control is implicit, because these structures of power, from the corporate structure to the governmental structure to the financial structures to the international NGOs, all of these different organizations do openly talk about the problems of society needing to be brought to heel. And more often than not, the problems that they're talking about is us talking openly, or us behaving in a manner that is more befitting our values or our taste than theirs. So again, you have to read between the lines by and large, but what I see, what bothers me, what has radicalized me, is the deep conviction that whatever they're saying, even if they don't intend it, which I think by and large they do, the rollout of these systems mean that they are reshaping humanity in their image or their preferred image. And there can be no greater exertion of control than to overhaul all of humanity according to your tastes.
I cannot agree more. Listen, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Today's News Talk, TNT.
Sometimes a car comes along that changes everything, with innovations never thought possible and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first DWB. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you will never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we removed the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
I have a feeling these are the suspects in question. The two occupants look like the people involved in the armed robbery. I'm approaching the vehicle. Request backup. The driver matches the description because of a wide-set nose.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver. And we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together.
Cutting through the clutter. This is Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show, where I'm talking with Joe Allen, and we are steaming through some of the most important subjects that are today, which, of course, revolve around AI and its introduction. Joe, can you give us a more positive idea of what AI could become, or is it all doom and gloom for human beings?
You know, I really learned the nuts and bolts of artificial intelligence from a gentleman, Justin Lane, Oxford-trained AI expert. He's now an entrepreneur. He has his own AI company. What he's trying to do, I think, is by and large positive, although he is maybe a little bit more comfortable with the transhuman elements than I am. In general, though, what I see is, you know, when we talk about transhumanism, the narrative that you hear all the time, transhumanism is kind of a globalist plot. Transhumanism is a leftist plot, right? They want to turn everybody into a transgender blue hair, or they want to, in some way, deracinate the planet. But what is really happening, as far as I can see, is it is completely outside of the boundaries of any of those categories. So some of the most prominent people who are either investing in or even working on the transhuman technologies of artificial intelligence, robotics, brain-computer interfaces, genetic engineering, all these sorts of goodies. You have people like Peter Thiel, very much a right-leaning, right-wing libertarian. You have people like Mark Andreessen, who has very much shifted to a very nationalist slash libertarian position. And a number of others who, even like Andrew Torba, right, who is using now Gab as a kind of a data trove to train his own AIs. So ultimately, the what would be like positive uses, every kind of ideological position, whatever ideological position any person might have, there is a way in which some artificial intelligence can be used to enhance your productivity, perhaps even to get a better sense of what is and isn't real if you believe that the data that you're using is accurate. But when you're doing that, as that process unfolds, what I see happening is basically nobody said the singularity had to be globalist. Nobody said the singularity had to be of any political bent or even religion. You even have a lot of people, kind of transhumanists, posthumanists, who believe that Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, all these should be programmed into the AI, or that the AI should be trained on this, and so therefore embody those values as well. I guess if you are not about becoming an AI symbiote by any means, whether it be through screens, virtual reality, non-invasive brain-computer interface, or, you know, a Neuralink, then you really have to reckon with the fact that these technologies are going to provide certain advantages. And if you deny their usage, if you say, I don't want to use this, you draw a hard line, then you may well be stepping out of the arena in some sense. If you and I decided no more staring into the evil black eye of the camera, well, then what? You know, are we going to talk on it? Are we going to go down to Hyde Park and yell from a stump? Or what happens then? So that's kind of there's the rub as far as the future goes. You might be a late adopter. You might be a heel dragger. I am both. But in the end, you have to wonder, how do you really put the brakes on this? What elements of humanity are going to survive intact and avoid this this angel of death as it creeps across our doorways?
So when we're talking about consensus there and what people think in general, it's being claimed that like the top 100 scientists who are working on AI on average don't see us reaching like artificial general intelligence until around 2070. That's what they explained on average, or what they predicted. Will we have to wait that long, or is this a way to convince people not to worry and AGI is just around the corner?
You know, among the experts, you know, there's varying indexes for kind of gauging where the experts are at. A lot of people have done a lot of different polls. The Stanford index, it was just published, I think, is one of the best, but it's still somewhat selective. Another interesting one is the Gladstone AI. They were commissioned by the State Department to do their analysis. It is somewhat different, but what you have, I mean, basically is just an argument, as with any group of people, right? You've got guys like Jan LeCun at Meta, who's always the skeptic saying, it's going to be many decades before we ever get there. And then you've got guys like Elon Musk who say that by the end of next year, we'll have AGI, and by 2029, we'll have an AGI that's smarter than all human beings on the planet. All of these sorts of dreams of the future, they all conflict, and I don't see any reason to get hung up on any one vision. What's more important, in my opinion, is asking the question, do I have a workplace in which I am now literally at the behest of either an AI assistant that I'm expected to constantly defer to, or am I working under some kind of AI manager, or am I working under a manager who has that buffer of the digital to always kind of avoid accountability? Same with education, same with medicine, and of course, the same with warfare and any other kind of day-to-day interaction. These more immediate concerns should be at the forefront of people's minds, because whether or not AGI appears or never appears, it won't matter this year and it won't matter next year. And so whatever cultural barriers we're going to put up to avoid submitting to the kinds of systems we saw unrolled in 2020 under the COVID regime, we need to be thinking very, very clearly about how to go forward with that. If you're going to like just stop here at the digital level of the internet and podcasting and Twitter, then I would say that the best move would be to just have systems in place, whether it be, you know, your VPN, your end-to-end encryption, Bitcoin, blockchain, whatever means you have in this like this liminal zone to secure your own agency, to secure your privacy, then you're going to be better off. If, on the other hand, you want to go semi-Luddite, I don't think anybody could survive as a full Luddite, then you better be making plans now. Because again, the wealthiest people on Earth, the most powerful companies and governments on Earth plan to unroll something like a singularity. It's going to be, I would imagine, very approximate. It's going to be a lot of smoke and mirrors, but it's not going to be all smoke and mirrors. And even if it was, Walmart was in many ways smoke and mirrors, and we saw how that ended. So I think that right now is the time to really be thinking about, how do you want to see the future unfold? And if you have very definite visions, then you are going to have to be prepared to say no every step of the way, because they are going to be expecting compliance every step of the way, as we've seen.
Yeah, I think it would be extremely naive. And I think a lot of people who have experienced the onset of smartphones, I had lots of friends who said, oh, I'm not gonna get a smartphone. But that only lasted as long as the point where you actually needed a smartphone to do basic things. And then everybody adopts. And of course, by that time, it's all around. So it becomes normalized. And that has a massive effect on people. So you were talking about one of the possible consequences there, which of course is the thing that everybody's most most afraid about, that when AI is advanced enough, that some form of world war is going to break out. What does an AI drone-driven world war look like?
An absolute nightmare. Let's just take, for instance, the vision that was put forward by the Future of Life Society. They were at the forefront of trying to stop or trying to attract different governments and companies to sign on to a ban of lethal autonomous weapons. And their film Slaughterbots, I think, gives people a very good idea of what this would look like, because these technologies exist right now. You're talking about drones. Right now, it's mostly fixed-wing drones, but increasingly it's moving to the quadcopters, sort of insectoid predators that would follow people around in swarms. But, you know, the three main mechanisms you have here, you have, of course, a human being is going to tell the AI what the appropriate target is going to be. And that's going to be identified either through facial recognition, uniform recognition, IP addresses, various markers. And then once the AI is kind of programmed to look for these things, then it would be able to select, guide itself to the target, and then detonate, if this is, say it's a quadcopter, a kind of a kamikaze drone. And then you have swarms of these. And if they're very inexpensive, and which they are, then you can basically just drive a truck out or some sort of transport unit, unload a massive swarm of drones programmed to kill, I don't know, all the Gazans, and it would begin doing so, maybe seeking out specific targets, or maybe it's going to kill all the MAGA people, whatever. If this were to actually come to a head, then you would have a very inexpensive way. Once the AI has been trained, once the infrastructure is there, which it is increasingly being put in place, then you're able to just, you have what are known as attritable weapons, very cheap kind of disposable weapons that you can unfurl, and really any loser, once it's in their hands, can use it to kill their enemies. If it's world war, I mean, you know, with world war, you've got everything. You've got everything on the table, nukes, blah, 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 even bioweapons, blah, blah, blah. But I think, again, like, if that breaks out, then I hope you've got a bunker with beans and bullets. Probably the more likely scenario will be the kind of slow roll that we've seen, in which AI doesn't come alive and kill everybody. We don't nuke everything. And we just simply kind of sleepwalk into a future that sucks more and more and more. And it will drain the life out of any person who has kind of tribal tendencies or a tendency toward a need for freedom and agency, a need for a kind of some level of anarchy. And we will just kind of sleepwalk into a long line leading to a self-checkout register that never works properly and is always telling you what to do.
That is a very, very worrying, of course. Now, we see, talking about slightly off topic, but on topic, the trans agenda, which we're seeing unfold worldwide, is it a precursor to push towards transhumanism, a way for them to prepare us for what's around the corner by using the terminology and having the idea that you can change your like specific parts of your body? Am I right to say that?
Yeah, you know, the connection is very direct, and you have people like Martine Rothblatt is probably the most famous, most known, who argue that transgenderism is a kind of on-ramp to transhumanism. You're using technology to alter the human being at will. You are virtualizing the self, and that self becomes more real. The virtual self becomes more real than the biological self. All that is definitely in play. There are many transgender people, though, like Emil Torres, kind of leftist guy, uses a lot of, you know, pronoun stuff, who's very anti-transhumanism. So there are all these different exceptions. And I think maybe the most important element of transhumanism, the quest to go beyond the biology by way of technology, is the more heteronormative uses of it. You've got the Enhanced Olympics that's, you know, right now being put forward by Peter Thiel. You have, by and large, people like Max Moore, the guy who coined transhumanism. I've communicated with him quite a bit on this. He's anti-woke. He's not all that enthused by transgenderism. Him and his wife are very much kind of heteronormative in their use of technology to go beyond biology or to enhance, out of all recognition, the human being. And so I think it's very misleading to think that transgenderism is kind of an exclusive on-ramp to this. I think that there are many heteronormative or gender normative ways, and I would say that's probably the dominant strain, that people are being seduced into this notion that your future is basically going to be realized by way of tech corporations, that these tech corporations offer you your primary path to self-realization. I would say it's the antithesis of every traditional view. And even if you're an atheist who would rather, you know, live in tune with nature and the animals, it is the antithesis of that as well.
That's listen, we've run out of time for today, but Joe Allen, I love what you do. I love the way you do it. Keep it up. And I enjoy hearing you speak and your input. Keep up the good work, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, from one Celtic redneck to another.
Looking forward to speaking again, my friend.
Exactly.
Well, my mind is busted right open, and it's not going to get any better during the second hour. We're going to be speaking to someone who looks deep within. I tell you, I really enjoyed that. And there's so many more questions that I could ask Joe. If you've got any questions in the chat, put a cue before it and we'll talk about it when I come back. But don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Johnny Bedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT.